In this episode of the Smart Community Podcast, I have a great conversation with Peter Bjorn Larsen, the Director of Smart City Insights. This podcast episode is another audio from the YouTube series I've been doing, catching up with previous podcast guests during the pandemic. We recorded this chat on the 1st of May, and since then, Peter tells me that he's doing well. He's doing a couple of nice local smart city projects, because obviously he's not traveling very much anymore. In this episode, Peter and I chat about what the situation was like in Denmark, pandemic-wise, in May, as well as some of the key differences between Denmark and Sweden's approach. We then discuss the ways that the smart city concepts of digital transformation and data sharing, as well as privacy, have come to the forefront during this crisis, and how the private sector has been well placed to respond quickly, having already much of the foundational pieces already in place. We cover data collaboratives, data privacy and security, as well as the way these complex issues are dealt with around the world, thanks to differences not only in cultural attitudes, but also digital preparedness of different nations. Peter then tells us about how he works and how the pandemic has changed the way we work and meet worldwide, which has environmental, accessibility and lifestyle impacts. We talk about the global work from home experiment, Zoom fatigue, and the pros and cons of digital workshops and virtual community building. We finish our chat discussing how this crisis has forced us into new ways of doing so many things, including a cool example about how Peter ran a Croatian marathon in Copenhagen. As always, we hope you enjoy listening to this episode as much as we enjoy making it.
Welcome to the Smart Community. Smart regions, smart towns, and smart cities. It's where we live, work, and play. With smart communities, the future starts today. Big data, smart mobility, emerging trends galore. The Smart Community Podcast is what you're looking for.
Hi, Smart Community friends. We have some exciting news. After 2.5 years and almost 200 episodes, the Smart Community Podcast has reached a major milestone. 100,000 downloads! 100,000! Wow. We are celebrating big time, digitally and socially distanced, of course, and you are invited. We are having an online party featuring smart fun and games, plus a keynote from Jonathan Reichenthal and an awesome panel discussion. It will be on Thursday, 8th of October, 2020 from 4 p.m. Queensland time. Head to mysmart.community/100k. That's 100k. To find out more details and check out what time that will be in your time zone. That's mysmart.community/100k. Can't wait to see you there. Talk soon. Bye. Hi, Peter. How are you today?
Hi, sorry. Very good here. Thank you. Early morning in Copenhagen.
Yes, thanks for getting up early to talk to me today. I'm really keen to hear how you are. Well, first of all, let's start with who are you and what do you do?
Yeah, my name is Peter Bjørn Larsen, and I am the owner of a small consultancy called Smart City Insights, which I've been running for 2.5 years, basically just advising cities and companies of how to implement the smart city concept. But I have worked with cities for the past 20 years on different types of strategies and so on. So yeah, been around for a little while now.
So you're based in Copenhagen?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, and we were lucky enough to actually catch up in person last time.
Well, yeah, exactly.
I was in Copenhagen. It was around this time last year, like April-ish, which, yeah, seems like a lifetime ago now.
Yeah, different situation now as well.
Yeah, so let's start with, like, we haven't actually, well, in Australia, we haven't heard a lot about what is happening in Denmark, actually,
yeah,
in Copenhagen. And so tell us how the COVID-19 crisis is affecting you from your perspective.
Yeah. Well, on a personal level, it's a special situation because I have two children, mm-hmm, and divorced to their mother, who lives in Sweden now. So, and Sweden and Denmark have two very, very different approaches. So maybe we can touch upon that a little bit later. Yeah, but everyone is good here. But it started a long time ago here in Denmark. And basically, I think this is what, 6-7 weeks ago, we were one of the first ones to have the lockdown. So that was a bit of a surprise. That's because I came home from New York and we started to talk about, you know, the coronavirus, COVID-19. And, you know, obviously it was still very active in China and you saw a lot of things happening there. So, but as nobody knew what's going to happen. So I came back from New York and basically 2 days later, you know, they closed the schools. We were told not to go into work. The public sector were all sent home. So, and we didn't really know what, you know, what was happening. But at that point, you thought, you know, this is really serious. So that's how it all started. So one of the first countries to have the lockdown.
When was that? About 6 or 7 weeks?
I'm trying to think exactly. I can follow up on that later. But
yeah, no, that's fine.
I think it must be early March, because I came back from New York. And I think around the 10th of March, so roughly almost 2 months ago.
Mm, yeah. And what's been happening kind of since? Is there any reprieve of restrictions and that type of thing?
Yeah, of course. I'm trying to think the orders. So obviously, I have both the personal thing with having children that's not in school, but also I run my business. And of course, that's a concern. And you know a little bit about my business. So I think 90% of my work is outside Denmark. So obviously that's a concern. How do we carry on with this type of work, which is in Belgium and New York and Sweden and Ireland and so on. But as it started, basically we're just told to do homeschooling for the kids, obviously. So that was one of the first things, you know, how do you continue that? And obviously you have these systems where you have messages, online systems where you have messages with the schools. So the teachers were still there and they said, we still have your homework. You need to go online and check it, and everything crashed because we're not used to using the, you know, online so much. So I think that was one of the first tests when you think about digital infrastructure, just to put my smart city hat on it. You know, we don't really have the capabilities to cope with it. So obviously all the supermarkets were still open, but most of the other things actually just closed down and nobody really knew what was happening at the time. So you were still allowed to go outside. There was a little bit about social distancing, which is similar as in the 2 meters like in many other countries. Also to try and avoid large gatherings, but you needed to figure out what does that actually mean here. So that's how it all started, like in, I guess, in many other countries, but really, really early, actually, before we almost had any confirmed cases. So we know this is coming. We can see there are some cases. So we want to avoid, we don't know how fast it's spreading. We want to make sure we have intensive care units, ventilators enough. And basically based on no knowledge whatsoever what's going to happen. In Italy, it was starting to go a bit wrong. So we said, okay, that was the sign when Denmark said, okay, let's close down because we don't want this. We want to have it under control and then open afterwards. So that was the point of view from the government. And of course, finances and economy is really, really important. So they really quickly actually made some packages for companies from different sectors. So there's different packages if you are self-employed, your SME, or if you're a large company, and the different kind of sectors you're working in. So they did this, you support packages with compensation. If you don't fire your employees, send them home, and you get 75% of compensation. So that's what I decided to do. I didn't know what was going to happen to my business. So I just decided to send my employee home and take it all myself. I still have to pay, obviously, but... Yeah, so that's how it all started a bit. I'm still confident that in the government that they would, you know, sort this out. And obviously we didn't know how long is this going to last. Is it 2 weeks or is it several months and so on? So I think that was a lot of questions, but a lot of dialogue and openness, I think, from the government side at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And you mentioned the difference between Sweden and Denmark. Can you talk a little bit about some of those differences?
Yeah, I can. You have to remember I'm Danish, I'm a bit coloured. A bit like Scotland and England. So, well, obviously they have. I used to work with something called the Öresund Committee, where you try to get business in the south of Sweden and the greater Copenhagen region. So there's cultural differences. And I think this is really important to understand, for me to personally, on a personal level, to understand the Swedish approach. So obviously they decide, you know, not to close schools down. They're still not close schools down, not to close restaurants, but obviously still care about social distancing, isolating elderly, and telling them not to, tell people not to visit. So that's what they've done from the start. And I think one of the things I see mainly about the big difference between the Swedes and the Danes, that the Swedes are very good to follow different orders, and definitely Copenhagen has not so much. So maybe we need the rules more than the Swedes. But, you know, looking on the hindsight, then if you look at, you know, what's been happening in terms of both the economy, but also, you know, we're talking about deaths and lives here. So that's a massive difference. But we don't know in the long run, of course, if what strategy was the best. So, of course, I have my personal opinion about what's the best. So, but you can see the death rate is per citizen is much, much higher in Sweden than it is in the rest of the Scandinavian countries, which is still very low. And which means we are opening up now, where they are now still on the same level, even maybe even considering closing things down now. So it's a bit of an opposite approach. I'm not saying it's wrong. That's up to personal. But it's very different. And of course, when I have children who travel between the countries, it's a little bit strange to, you know, they came from with the train from Denmark to Sweden. There was nobody in the train, hardly anyone. And that was, you know, you had to keep the distance. You change. As you say, Sweden is right next to it. It takes 20 minutes to get to Sweden.
Did that
But then you go into Malmö, a city in Sweden, and they have to change the train. And the next train is packed with people. So there's a lot of fear into for the kids. And so we're going to first class. We will pay for that because they were afraid, you know, of this. Also because children, it's actually been good. There's here with the news for children, where children ask questions. Actually, the Prime Minister, Danish Prime Minister, answered questions based on those kids that was asking the questions, and to make sure that they understand this is important, but also, you know, to try and keep things calm and answer their questions. So, yeah, so that's why it's a bit strange. You can actually see Sweden. If I go on top of the apartment, I can see Sweden. Totally different strategy. But again, I think they're still keeping, in many places, the social distancing as well. So, but and especially Stockholm that's been hit. So the biggest city in Sweden, and it's the same in Denmark, is Copenhagen that's been hit the hardest, but not even near as severe as Sweden.
Mm-hmm. So interesting. And it's such a foreign concept for Australians to, like, even when I was there, just to be able to pop over the border and, you know, that you would catch a train to another country.
So, yeah.
A weird concept, but then yeah, I actually hadn't really thought about that at all. The different approaches to different countries, because Australia's a huge island, right? And we're only,
yeah,
you know, it's us. And then we talk about New Zealand, obviously, but you don't just pop over to New Zealand whenever you feel like it, or when you have to, if you live in two countries like your children do.
Yeah,
so, yeah, really interesting.
So of course, the what had a huge impact here is we closed the borders relatively early as well. And that has a huge impact, obviously, because so they're still allowing, you know, goods and to travel in and out of Denmark, and if a family to go back to Denmark. But, you know, that you can't travel, basically. So there's no flights, so which is really strange for me. So almost getting like I need a flight soon. But it's a little bit strange that, you know, you have border control with the police and the military, and you get checked. I was on a Danish island where you have to travel through Sweden, which again was a bit of a strange experience because you just cross the border and you just see, you know, there's people in cafes and there's nobody here. But then you go to the Danish island and then it's the same. And there was basically nobody outside. And you came back and the military is there to check you, and there's different checkpoints and these kind of things when you get in. So kind of realize how, you know, this is a serious time. And that's, but, and I think, of course, the Swedish government is taking this serious as well, but as I mentioned, a very different approach to this. So.
From a smart city perspective, what things are you seeing where, I guess, you've worked with lots of different countries, but where they've kind of taken that digital transformation already, or they have implemented some kind of smart city project or plan or whatever? Are you seeing any, I guess, impacts of that with how they've dealt with or how they can deal with this current crisis?
Yeah, I think so. I think what we've seen is a big response from the company side, so the private sector really saying, so I actually was in another podcast last week where we talked about, you know, digital infrastructure and how is this helping. So I think one of the things is how can technology help? So one thing is the restrictions that you have on the social gatherings, distancing and so on. So of course, the ones that have the cameras or optic sensors, if you want, or different sensors, you know, they can measure these things, not to go out and give fines necessarily, but more saying, well, here we have a problem. There's way too many people, so we might actually go there and close it. Or are people actually able to stick to the restrictions? Is working? So that's fine. Let's not do anything else. So here in Denmark, we're still allowed to go for a run. We're still allowed to go outside. There's takeaway. You can buy coffee. And things are opening up a lot more. We can maybe talk about that a little bit later. But I think it's just to be able to analyze what's actually happening. How are people moving around? And are they actually sticking to it? So that's one thing. The other thing is from the data perspective. So a really interesting thing we've seen is that you now get these what are called data collaboratives, which I think is, I always talk a lot about that. But this is basically where companies come together. So that's different both in the US and in Europe and in Asia as well. You're seeing that private sector company who has a lot of information, they are coming together around to say, well, we can track things. You can track. So that could be telcos, for example, where it's still anonymized. But so basically, if we know these people are infected or have the coronavirus, we can track where they've been and we can say there's a big chance that, you know, other people, they should maybe get tested if they've been here. So that's happening in China, it's happening in Finland, and Denmark, and other places as well. But also other types of information about the economy and everything else as well. So we see a lot of that. We saw Google and I think it was Facebook and Apple going together as well to explain people movement. And so I think what we have worked with for a long time from a smart city perspective, you know, to do strategies and to mobility planning, mobility as a service, all these kind of things where you need to understand how the city is functioning now as a crisis. So therefore you actually realize, you become more aware of the different tools that's actually available. If that's digital, if it's private sector data or public sector data, even the weather is important. You know, if the weather is really nice, which has been here in Denmark, not today, but some of the other days, you just get a lot of people out there. And then you can prepare, but that's still less data. It's just a weather forecast. I know that. But then you can actually say, okay, let's not run the trains that much so people don't go gather in the trains and these things. So a lot of different types of initiatives that's come together, especially I think the private sector coming together with the information that the governments are asking for and the cities as well. The other thing we've seen is development of apps. So basically you can say, I'm willing to track myself. So it's like a COVID-19 app. So you've seen that one of the first ones to take it out there was in Norway. I think you also have one in Denmark now, and I think there's other ones around the world as well. But basically, giving the citizens an opportunity to collect the data and share the data, of course, in a secure manner and these things. So quite a few has actually downloaded that app. Not so much, I don't know the status in Denmark, but I know in Norway, it's been quite a few that's done that. Because it's a good cause, so it's nice. You need to know these things in order to do different, you know, measures to try and fight the COVID-19, but also in the future. So if something else comes, like we had SARS and all the other things before, if something new comes, how do we react to that quicker than we do now? how do we then put in different restrictions? How do we make sure that the infection won't go so quickly like it did in Italy and other places? So how can we use technology and data to do that? Then there's all the privacy issues. There's obviously a big discussion. So is it okay to use the telco data? I also know that in China they use QR codes and they use information from the health authorities, the hospitals, the transport authorities, and the telcos. So you can say, well, it's working because they actually know that all the patterns and the spread of the virus and who might have been infected. You need to go and check it. But are you then crossing the border in terms of privacy issues? So that's a big discussion in Denmark. It's a big discussion in Norway. It's a big discussion in even in China, many other places, and the US and so on. So yeah, I think for me, I think it's exciting. So one of the things, the data collaboratives, so a place you can go as a city or a company, as a government, to say, where do I actually find the information that's out there in a very fragmented data world? So how do I find it? And I've seen a rise of data collaboratives already from New York and other places that's happening now. And I think this is just showing if you really need quick information, the Danish government suggested to have the travel card data for public transport, but nobody's traveling with public transport because the virus is here. So it doesn't show anything about how people move around. And then, you know, as I mentioned before, you need the private sector then to show the information and say what's actually available. So that was a long answer.
No, it's super interesting and so many things happening in this space. And yeah, I find it very interesting as well, like just, I guess, the complexity of it all, the fact that we're dealing with quite sensitive information, very sensitive information in some cases, and depending on who the person is, can have quite dire consequences. And obviously we want to keep health front of mind and, you know, number one priority. But yeah, the privacy and security and all those things are definitely key considerations that we can't just forget about because we're in an emergency or a crisis. But yeah, I've been listening and reading and talking to so many different people, and it is really, really complex. And, you know, it's going to be complex. All of these issues are really complex because you're dealing with humans, right? Yeah. And in different cultures, that it's going to have different nuances and context. And, you know, I know that like South Korea controlled their, you know, spread really quickly, but some of the things that they were able to do, you wouldn't consider in Australia that one, we wouldn't have the system set up to do it, but two, it wouldn't be acceptable to do that.
Yeah, I talked to the Shanghai Data Exchange, one of the vice presidents for that, who explained the Chinese approach to it. And it makes a lot of sense. And you get the information everyone is asking for, but are you crossing the line in terms of, they talk about, security and people. So you need to, that was with a QR code. So basically if you go in anywhere, you know, you have a QR code and it's colored. So if it's red, you're not allowed to go anywhere basically. And you are restricted. And if you're yellow, you might have been exposed to people with COVID-19, and the green one, you can go anywhere you want. But then you can actually see you have been in an area where we know there's been 25 people infected on the 23rd of March, whatever. So maybe you should get a check. So they say we don't know who the individuals are, but you just get a number with the QR code. But is it crossing the line? I probably think so. That's what everyone is asking for. And we're trying to go to do apps and get citizens to do the apps, but you don't get the information that you need and that's costing lives at the end of the day. So it's a really, really, really difficult, it's not like planning a new metro or something we're talking about here. It could save lives. I agree with you. It's so, so complex to discuss it. Every time you talk about lives and health, then it's a little bit different than, you know, planning a new part of the city and so on. So, interesting.
Yeah, and for your business, I know you used to go into a hub, an innovation or co-working hub. Were you used to working, you know, from anywhere before?
Yeah, so it's Bloxhop probably where we, I think we met.
Yeah.
So that's like this built environment, future cities, co-working space where you have anything from the city of Copenhagen to even government and startups, architects, urban planners, technology companies, everything jointly. So they have not closed down, but of course you still have the social distancing. I normally sit in there and work. And in normal circumstances, when things like this happen, what we do in there is to have all our different kind of skills and knowledge, put them together. And this is the whole point of Bloxhop. You know, you have, you're working with the built environment and the cities, and you try to combine the different skills. So for me, when I talk about data collaborative, it's the same kind of idea. So you get people that know different things from different backgrounds, and you put them together. So, but obviously I've been working a lot from home. There's not many people in there, so you can, but it's, so it's safe and good to be in there and to get out of the house sometimes.
Mm.
But when I work with the sort of companies and cities I work with in Denmark and abroad as well, so obviously it's changed the way we do meetings because I can't fly there, obviously. And I think for the first 2 weeks, people were a bit apprehensive. So, oh, we can't have this type of meetings where we're like 9 people on the call. It won't work. And I don't think it did the first week or the first 2 weeks. But people are now starting to understand this is actually possible. You just need to treat online meetings like you do face-to-face meetings.
Mm-hmm.
So you need a, you know, meeting agenda and you need to stick to it. And so that's been a big change of how efficient these types of meetings are. Mm-hmm. And hopefully for the future. So I travel enough, so I would like to travel less. So I'm also hoping that, you know, it's not necessary to fly.
Mm.
We're talking Europe, so it would just be another city in Australia from Canberra to Sydney.
Yep.
We might not, why not fly? We can just take it online. And I think that's going to change, I hope, as well, that we can take a lot more meetings online. And this is also for the environment and many other things, economy, that it doesn't make sense to fly out for a two-hour meeting. So
yeah, like definitely reducing our individual carbon footprint.
Yeah, I could do with reducing mine.
Yeah, I mean, I do some offset, but yeah, if like that's the thing. I think it's interesting to hear you. You're like, oh, this isn't going to work. But then when it's the actual only option and, you know, what you do delivers value to them, then it has to work, right? And it won't necessarily work perfectly the first time. But then once we get used to it, we'll work out. I've been doing some stuff on digital etiquette and digital hygiene. So like I'm feeling very Zoom fatigued these days, and then trying to, you know, work in that non-screen time. And because this is going to go on for quite a while. And it is difficult though, because for me, like I do my master's obviously online and working online, and then, you know, a lot of everything's online, podcasting, all those fun things. But yeah, so but it makes it even more important to actually give myself those breaks, go outside, or just even taking phone calls rather than video call if you don't have to do video and all those, that type of stuff. But
I agree with that. And I think as well that what everything is missing now is, you know, the social contact with people. So it's fine to talk online, but it's sometimes nicer just to, not that we have to hug each other or everyone, but that's what you go to the one. We do that at a meeting sometimes as well. But there's some things that's easier to do when you're in a room together. So if you have a new client from my side, so we are submitting a proposal later today for a big client in the UK. And it's a project we need to do in 3 months if we win it. But we're not going to see the client in person, which is, I've never tried that before. And I really, really think it's a big project. So it's actually a smart TV and more digital smart TV roadmap we have to do.
Mm.
We're not the people we work with. And then that's going to be a big challenge and quite interesting. So
Yeah, that's interesting. So I was doing a bunch of workshops in person in regional Australia. And I guess I had met the client. I met her at a conference like beforehand or whatever. But basically, then we pivoted really quickly to then be able to do them online. And it was a different process, and that you have a different, it is different, but there are benefits to that as well. So appreciating those. So more people now could access it. You know, you could do different things. You can make it shorter kind of chunks and that type of thing, so more people could come and all those type of things. Yeah. But from those, I've now put another proposal together for a council, and I will not see them at all, only online. No. And it will be interesting, yeah. But I also find it a bit, what's the word? I think that it is good in a sense that it will open up opportunities for people that might not be able to travel, you know, all the time or whatever, and also open up opportunities for us that people that you won't have to go, you know, the flying thing, right? Like that you'll yeah. actually be able to develop a relationship online. Sounds a bit odd, but a digital relationship. And
it
then but maybe you only have to meet that person once rather than, you know, before you would maybe have to fly to New York 3 times during the project, but maybe you just yeah, do it absolutely. Once and then yeah. you know, you've done all those good things of reducing your carbon footprint or whatever, but that relationship is still strong because we've accepted the digital nature that yeah. involved in it now.
Yeah, I have a concrete example with New York where we're discussing mm-hmm. a project actually about data collaborative, but where we said, oh, you should come over sooner. You're coming over in May. This was back in March. Maybe we can then have another meeting. But we already have 2 meetings now. And we were all thinking that, why should I be there? I would like to be there in person because I love New York. But on the other hand, you know, is it worth it flying for, you know, a 3-hour workshop? Probably not. So, and I think what we have now is more individual meetings. So workshops are difficult, but there's, if you just talk to the individuals one by one, it takes a little bit longer time, I think. So there's a time perspective in this, but you still get the same information you need. And sometimes it's maybe better. So you know how workshops work, and you always have 1 or 2 persons in the room who are the ones that will say most of the things.
Yep.
Yeah, exactly. And people are afraid of talking because there's some higher ranked person sitting there and they know if I say something, they won't. So even there, I think a lot of the meetings I had, which was meant to be workshops, I can already now feel we get more information. It takes longer as well, but you actually get more information. But again, then there's some of the, it's really hard to explain complex things that we work with from, for example, a smart city perspective to people yes. who don't know what the concept is. So it's nice to be there in person to draw and take the questions. So,
yeah, like on that workshop thing, with some of my clients and clients that would never have like even suggesting having a Skype meeting or whatever
yeah.
rather than traveling, that was crazy. Now they're all at home. And we were supposed to have a big workshop together face-to-face, but then I've been able to split it up into, smaller chunks and only 1-hour sessions, and we got all the information we needed and it was purely dedicated to that branch. So you didn't get those loud voices. You only, you know, got the people, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
But we did it in an interactive way as well. We had online sticky notes and all these type of things. And then we were able to pull that together. And we'll be doing something similar for some of the other workshops that we'll have. And, so it's different, but it's definitely possible. And I think we'll see more of them because ultimately they are better value for money as well a lot of the time because you're having shorter sessions. You know that you know, it's not like, oh, I'm here for a day. Cool. I'll just relax, you know.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, cool. I've got an hour and a half. Let's go, 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 or whatever. So, it's going to be interesting after to see what sticks and what stays around. And I think that will be, you know, we can influence that as well. Like,
exactly. Things are definitely starting to open up a lot here now. So the schools are open again here in Denmark for the smaller classes. So it's like I hate that word, but new normal kind of thing where, you know, but they learn to do things differently at school level. This is the smaller classes. Mm. The more shops are opening up now and hairdressers and these kind of things. And people are going back into work again. So you can't have all staff in, but maybe that's how you're going to have it in the future as well. You know, why have all the staff in when you can actually work from home sometimes? And this has always been a normal thing to work from home, but people will say it's not that efficient. But maybe this is changing the way we actually live and work. So is it more efficient can you be as efficient working from home as you are when you're in the office? And I think it depends on what you do. On a personal level, for me, if I need to sit and write, you know, I prefer to be at home. You know, I can right when I want, and but when you're in the office, there's people that want to talk to you all the time, and then you're actually not that concentrated. So,
Yeah.
So that would be interesting to see what's going to happen with that, I think.
I find I work ridiculously long hours when I'm working at home. I mean, I'm used to working at home. But during this time, because it's just been so... And again, that's just something I need to check myself. But it is very easy to do. You get up, you do your workout online now. So then you just sit. And then after you've done your HIIT session or whatever, if you get up that early to do it, and then like you can easily go into the night. And then you're like, oh, I'll just relax. And then you go and sit on the couch in front of another screen. And then you're like, oh, God, no, I need to, I don't know, read a book or sit outside or something.
And that's why I really appreciate it here. And I think, again, maybe because we took the measures early in the lockdown early, that we're still allowed to go outside and do exercises and run and these kind of things. So I'm just thinking about Paris and London and
Spain,
Madrid, Rome, and all of these places where, you know, the children haven't been outside for a month. You know, it's, again, what's that doing to people? And getting a little bit of back to the Swedish approach. So I think when you start to see the long run, they're not been locked in or locked down that much. So maybe in the long run, there is something about it. So, but I really, really, really appreciate it that you're still able to go for a walk. You can, you know, you can go for a run, do your exercise. You can go cycling. There's no restriction at all on that, except social distancing and lots of gatherings. So.
Similar to Australia, I also really appreciate that.
I think that's so important. And because of all the screen time you're talking about as well. So,
yes, I think I need a screen-free day. I'm just trying to work out when that is. My birthday next week, right? And I was like, oh, maybe I'll do it on my birthday. But then that's the only way I'm going to be able to talk to people on my birthday. Like a virtual party or something. I don't know. I haven't really thought about it because I was supposed to have a big party, like it's my 30th, right? So I had hundreds. I did invite hundreds, but just say, 100 people were going to be there. It was Harry Potter themed. It was going to go off. It was going to be really fun.
Yeah.
And I'll just be 29 for a lot, a bit longer. It'll be fine. And I'll, I will have the party at some point to celebrate.
Yeah, exactly.
It's going to be interesting. I haven't even really thought of a replacement or whatever because I've just been so busy with everything and not necessarily like super busy, like, you know, working. It's working as well as coping, as well as playing my business because, I also, you know, have to think about my business. And as much as we're in the smart city space, there's that apprehension to invest in anything, you know, affects us, right? So, it's been interesting time.
Yeah, I think I had work to do, but I was more concerned about, is there anything coming going forward? You know, is there anything been paid for? Is there any new contracts? So it looks like it. It looks like it's fine. But,
I'm in the same boat. And again, like I feel very grateful that being able to do the work that I do. And even if I just say didn't have work for a couple of months, I'd be fine. Like I would, wouldn't be the best, but I would be fine and I'd still be able, and we've got a bit of assistance as well from the government, which is great. I mean, I can access some of it and, you know, keep my staff on and, you know, that's what I really care about actually is making sure that my, you know, the people that rely on me for income, that they can continue that. And also that means I can still produce the podcast. Like, and that's a really, something that I think is a valuable resource at the time. Yeah. Why I wanted to talk to people and share their stories. Obviously, this is, you know, a bit of a different format.
Yeah.
But just, share stories from around the world to give that sense of, like, hope and that we are a global community and that we can innovate, share ideas and, you know, go through this time together.
Yeah, I don't know. We were meant to go, so I have with some friends, a social running club, wine running club. And we were meant to go to Croatia to run a half marathon on Sunday. So we decided to run it, but here in Copenhagen. Oh, so like a time trial where we 2 minutes in between. So we did it with all the government restrictions and so on. And we did kind of posted. I told the organizers in Croatia, we're doing, I'll send some pictures. And now it's in the local media in Dubrovnik in Croatia. And people are writing and people from other countries say, oh, we're going to do the same thing. So all of a sudden, you know, we're doing things in a new way, but it's still creating ties across different countries and nations. And so I thought that was really positive and really nice to see a lot of nice comments, even locally here as well, but also in Croatia and Finland and Norway and US, where we responded to it. So I got new ideas to, oh, we can still do that. So,
yeah.
There's new things coming up, new way of doing things and get connections, I think. So.
I really love that story. Thanks so much for sharing. We'll better wrap up, I suppose. I'll better let you, I don't know, go to work or do something.
Unfortunately, yes.
It's nearly beer o'clock here, so, you know.
Yeah, it's still early days. So it's, for some people, it's the 1st of May, so it's like Workers' Day, whatever they call it. So a lot of people finish at 12 today, but not an independent consultant.
Yeah, we don't know what a public holiday is, do we?
No, not really, no. Is it Sunday?
Yeah. It's been so great to chat with you, Peter. And yeah, let's catch up again and we'll do a real podcast where I ask you about smart cities and smart communities. And this is a real podcast, sorry. You know what I mean. Anyway, I want to see myself.
I understand. Yeah, that would be great.
Yeah, it's been really good to see your face, and thanks so much for sharing all your stories, and I'm glad that you're okay, and we'll get through this time together.
We will, I'm sure. The same to you.
Thank you. Appreciate it, and we'll talk soon.
Thanks, thanks a lot.
Bye. Bye-bye.
The Smart Community Podcast is brought to you by My Smart Community. If you're looking for support in podcast strategy and production, workshop design and facilitation, or communication and media advisory, get in touch. Email hello@mysmart.community or head to www.mysmart.community.
Thanks so much for listening to the Smart Community Podcast. Show notes for this episode and all other episodes are available on our website, mysmart.community/podcast. If you have any questions for us or any of our guests, you can email hello@mysmart.community. You can also find us on the socials. We are on LinkedIn and Twitter @smartcomhq. That's com with 2 M's. If you are enjoying the podcast, please hit subscribe so you never miss an episode. And we would love for you to leave us a rating and review at wherever you listen. This really helps us reach more ears and eyes, so thank you for your support. As always, we hope you enjoyed listening to this episode as much as we enjoyed making it.
The Smart Community Podcast is what you're looking for.